Hour 2 Overdrive continues. TSN 1050 on the TSN app, your home smart speaker, and up on TSN 4. Brian Hazy, O'Doug, Jeff O'Neill, Jamie Noodles, McLennan, Masai Ujiri in about a half an hour, Mike Johnson in about 5 minutes, Ben Simmons suspended down in Philly. The league hasn't even officially started until tonight. And
this guy, man.
It's been a wild ride so far in the NBA. It always is. It always is.
Why go and do that? And I know we said you've got to show up and then you got to make it difficult on people. But I just think, like, careers aren't that long, man. If you can be around for 10 or 15 years, you're very blessed. And to have this...
Be a pro, man.
This mark, yeah, like that. Just showing up and like not doing a drill, and the coach is like, "Go do it," and then you just drop the ball and leave. I don't know. I don't get it. I only understand this because I'm retired now, and I look back on what I did and my legacy playing the sport. And man, it just sucks having regrets and looking back. I think he's going to look back on this and say, "What the hell was I doing, man?"
Yeah, I mean, there's obviously a Hayes. You've said it, and you've been very consistent with it. You think there's a narrative, a method to his madness, we'll call it. Like he's got the playbook of Harden and
Jamie. What kind of method would be to get fined $1.4 million?
I don't know, because the guy makes so much money anyways. I don't think it's about money. I think it's about him moving on. What bothers me, and I'm kind of, maybe this is a little bit too old school, I would feel disappointed in letting down my teammates and you know, letting down my coach. Do you have zero respect for Doc Rivers? Like, do you have zero respect for your teammates and for your sport? Like, yes, you want to be moved. I understand that. Find a different way. Show up and be a pro and say, hey, I'm going to give everything I've got, but I do want to be moved. I do want to move on. Like, it bothers me that's the way he chose to go about it. Because honestly, and this sounds terrible, 10 years ago or 15 years ago in my sport, I know somebody would have grabbed me and said, like, pull your head out of your ass. Like, that's the way it would have gone.
Well, it makes you wonder if there's anyone that is doing that in the Sixers room, if anyone cares enough. You know, like, maybe he doesn't have any allies in there. Right? Maybe he has ostracized himself, Ben Simmons. But he was kicked out of practice because he wouldn't partake in a drill. I don't even think that's within 150 yards of practicing with a cell phone in your pocket, which is what he did yesterday.
I know.
Like, that is outrageous. It's one thing to say I'm not doing a drill. It's another thing to, like, that's Costanza trying to get fired by the Yankees. Like, you're out there practicing with a cell phone in your pocket. This is the National Basketball Association.
It's disrespectful.
Outrageous. But there is a playbook. Harden did it in Houston. Butler did it in Minnesota. And that is what is happening here. I'll show up, but I'm going to make your life a living hell until you have to get rid of me. And you know what? I blame, not equally, but close to it, Daryl Morey and company in the Sixers front office. You had to just cut bait. Yes, you're not getting what you think you should get from him. He is not overly valued right now in the NBA. He can't shoot. Ben Simmons has one flaw, and it happens to be a significant one in the sport of basketball. He can't shoot. He won't shoot. He doesn't shoot, and the ball goes through his hands all night. So you're not going to get a king's ransom for a guy who's barely a prince in the NBA right now, the way he's playing. Also, max contract. So the Sixers, they should have cut bait. He showed up. They didn't even think he was coming. I think it's abundantly clear they didn't want him to show up. They were just waiting for the price to become what they wanted it to be before they pulled the trigger on the deal. He's out. He's going to be gone. There's no way you're going to salvage this. But he's there because he's like, I have to be, and this will make it even more of a pertinent issue for them to get rid of me, because if I'm in this room, it's going to be chaos, and that's exactly what it is right now with Ben
Simmons. I always find it shocking how when you got to show up and make an ass of yourself, how still someone else on the outside looks at that and buys in. And it's like, what? I want that? No way.
What team's going, I'm dying for that. I'm dying for this guy, because when it comes down that he wants to leave my team,
because
he's
not Harden.
No, he's not. He's not Jimmy Butler. And yeah, that's the truth, man. Listen, you got issues with the front office. You got issues with ownership. That kind of stuff happens. It's a business, man. We lose sight of it. What I can't wrap my head around is why you would do that when you're in the trenches with your teammates and coaches, right? Like, that is a different category. We just went through it with Aaron Rodgers and the Packers. He didn't have an issue with LaFleur, the coach, or any of his teammates. Loves them. Hates the GM, hates the owner. And right. when Diva throughout the offseason caused a stir, we'll see where it goes in the future. But by all accounts, Aaron Rodgers, when he's been on the field or at the practice facility, didn't do anything that would make his teammates lose respect for him. Ben Simmons clearly has no respect for that, or has no plan in engaging in that, because this is just basically telling your teammates, I don't care. I'm not going to be professional. I'm going to try to drag all of you down here with me. And I'm with you. I think 10, 15 years down the road, I guarantee you he looks back on it and regrets it.
That Embiid, even what he said today, he looks like he wants to choke him out.
Well, Embiid just wants him gone. You know, like, it's very clear. Embiid's like, get rid of this guy. You know, like, we got bigger fish to fry, man. They're a really good team. They're a good team. And they just want to move on from this mess. And it is a chaotic mess down in Philly. Masai Ujiri later in the hour. The NBA is back tonight. And joining us now on the Maple Turtle Hotline, here's our TSN hockey analyst, big NBA fan himself, Mike Johnson. How would you handle that, Johnny, if you were in the Sixers locker room, teammates with Ben Simmons?
Well, I mean, I don't want to be old school, and I probably wouldn't be the one to do it. But, like, as Noodles was talking about, I almost want someone to grab him and say, hey, what are you doing? Like, beat it if you're going to behave this way, or we're going to make life miserable to you. But if I'm running the Sixers, Hayes, I am going to beat Simmons at his own game. I'm not going to be complicit in this and, you know, sell him for pennies on the dollar. I'm like, nope. If he doesn't behave properly, I will suspend him as they will and hurt him the one place where he doesn't want to get hurt. I'm going to suspend so he doesn't get paid. I'm just going to sit him out so he doesn't get paid. His value is not going to get any lower by not being around. People already know what he can do and what he can't do. He's young enough. It's not like he's going to age out or anything. And you mentioned it. Like, it's funny how perception changes, because Jimmy Butler does the exact same thing, maybe even worse, in front of cameras, to Andrew Wiggins, to Carl Towns, like, to the coach, and everyone's like, what a leader down in Miami. What a guy. You need a guy like him on your roster to go all the way. Jimmy buckets. And I'm like, well, the guy could not have been a bigger jerk if he tried. So I think he saw that playbook trying to do it, but I'd call his bluff and suspend him all the time and make life miserable for him and wait him out.
They've gone this far. I don't think you can have him back in the room. Like, he can't be playing night two of the season. He's going to miss the first game. You imagine this guy's in the starting lineup playing 38 minutes? I don't see how it's going to work. He's not committed to it. You can't trust him to be in that position.
But if I can suspend him for not practicing properly or having a cell phone on him, I would suspend him every single time I could. I would hit him in the pocketbook where it hurts him, where he doesn't want to get hit. That's why he showed up to camp. And then I would just wait it out. Yeah. So I got the deal I wanted.
See, you can't Game have him. You're right. You got to either double down with him or get him the hell out of there. But you can't allow him in a game, because he would do something stupid, like dunk on his own bucket or throw the You know what I mean?
Like, where's his headspace at? Like, even if it's not something like comical or egregious in nature, it's just, can you commit to believing that this guy's effort is going to be at 100%. I would not be comfortable in that if I'm Doc Rivers.
No, and I mean, basketball is an individual sport. Like, there is no trust, no faith. You know, you have to at least believe that the guy beside you wants to be somewhat part of what you're doing. Mm-hmm. It would be no good, toxic completely. But again, if I can get him out of there and say and cost him money, get him to shut up and just be, you know, leave us alone, then I would try.
Well, we're going to see where it plays and how it plays out, because it's the NBA's only back tonight. We're already dealing with a massive soap opera. It's going to be awesome. As for the NHL and the Maple Leaf side of things, Austin Matthews was flying last night. I mean, it's 16 shot attempts, 8 on net. I thought he had that one in overtime where it was Nylander actually made a great pass, kind of stalled and drew everyone in. And Matthews generally puts that home. Maybe that was a sign of rust. Like, that one seems to go in 9 times out of 10 with him, and it did not last night. But what did you make of his game, his first one of the year?
Oh, he looked awesome. I mean, I would assume he would have been in shape, right? Because you can skate as much as you want with a bad wrist. So his legs should have been good, and his kind of his ability to play 20 minutes, 20 almost three as he ended up playing. But his puck skills, his timing, popping into places, he was everything you want him to be. And he looked like he had plenty of pop on his shot. Sometimes, I hate to say it, the goaltenders are just better than the shooters, even the best shooter in the world, and Shesterkin was that last night. I don't think Austin Matthews will ever have another game where he has 8 shots and 16 attempts of the quality that he had last night and not score. I mean, he's just too good. So I think if you're Toronto, you're not happy about their inability to score, but you got to be delighted with how good Austin Matthews looked and how comfortable and healthy and on point he was right away.
You know, Johnny, I was talking earlier about, you know, the Rangers and how loose they look. And I know, you know, Turk, Gallant, is a good coach, very well liked, but he's not an X's and O's guy, you know, per se. And that team is just kind of very loose, some young talent. I didn't think Panarin was particularly great until he had to be with one shot. And, you know, you're a guy that's watched the Rangers a lot. I think it was great just to watch somebody other than, if you're a Leaf fan, other than Ottawa or Montreal are the ones that we've seen a lot recently. The Rangers have some really key pieces there. You know, what do you make of them getting to the next level? Like, are they missing, you know, one or two players? What do you think?
Well, no, they're missing the structure, right?
Right.
I mean, more than the players. They have a ton of talent to score goals on the back end as well. It looks like they have a great goalie, but seems like they're almost trying to follow the recipe they used when they had Hank. Like, we're going to just kind of play a little fast and loose and rely on the fact that we have an awesome goalie to get us places. And you're right. Gerard Gallant is a player's coach because he lets them go play, encourages offense. He doesn't run a super strict system on the ice. And they got players that can get pretty loose, you know, between Panarin and Zibanejad, Lafreniere, Kreider. Like, these guys are not your Minnesota Wild from your expansion days, Noodles. So,
yeah.
Like, they'll outscore their problems, but they have problems until they change the way they play. But that's been the way for a couple of years now. Like, they're not great 5-on-5. They give up way more shots, way more chances, and have for a couple seasons now. And Gerard Gallant alone is not going to be enough to fix that.
When it comes to where the goaltending is at here in Toronto, we were talking about Jack Campbell off the top of the show and how much he's played.
Great.
Although I think, yeah, he's looked great. And I think these are the starts he would have had anyway, right? Like Mrazek went night two. He had to go in and play the third in Ottawa, but he was going to play Saturday, going to play Monday. He'll split this weekend with Hutchinson. But the crowd reaction to him last night, calling out his nickname, which I hope sticks and becomes a thing when they're leading or close to it and he's playing well. But was one of, if not the biggest question marks coming into the season. What will the goaltending look like, specifically Campbell, and can he carry it over? It's only been three starts, but he has answered every question for me so far. And, you know, I remember saying this before opening night, that if he can establish himself as a number one as opposed to a part of a tandem, I think that's more beneficial for the team. I think that's a good sign, and I think he's off and running to at least give himself that chance.
He certainly is. I mean, what more could you possibly ask? I guess a couple of wins, but his numbers are spectacularly good. I don't know if liking your goalie matters, but they really seem to like this guy. Like, they really want to play for him, and they want to have him be successful, and they want to get wins when he's in there. I do think you have the one thing, and Noodles, you would know this with goalies and their workload. I do think you would want to be cautious and monitor closely how he's feeling physically. I don't think, you know, you would look at the calendar and say, okay, they'll play those three or four, split this weekend. You know, you kind of, the obvious starters that the starter would get. Like, I would still, and if that adds up to 57, 54, whatever it is, I would still, even if he's playing well, be always checking in, like, how is your body? We know he's had some injuries even last year throughout his career, and just not overwork him, because I imagine the cumulative wear and tear playing more than he probably ever has in the last decade is something you don't want to take for granted. But man, he's been fantastic, and they need him to be, because yeah, I don't know how much they're going to play Hutchinson in behind him, and hopefully Mrazek gets healthy soon, but he's been as good as any starting goalie in the league, and that's a pretty good sign for the Toronto Maple Leafs.
Well, that's kind of the biggest challenge for me yesterday, because you're right. Campbell's had a fantastic start. But they don't have that luxury of like, hey, we just went and spent $3.5 million on Mrazek and a 3-year deal. Like, we're going to have that tandem situation. He's not available right now. So, you know, Hutchinson is, I think he's a really good number three. Like, he's a guy who can come up, give you NHL minutes. But he's, if it's a long run, then you start to take a look at that scenario. Now, you look at their schedule. They've got a back-to-back. I would start him Friday, personally. I would start
Campbell
Hutchinson
on Friday?
Friday. No, Hutchinson Friday.
Okay.
Against San Jose. San Jose's playing in Ottawa on Thursday night. So you're going to catch San Jose in a back-to-back situation, and then I would put Campbell in Saturday night against Pittsburgh. Now, that being said, Campbell might say, you know what, I want the home start. Let Hutchinson sink or swim in Pitt on a back-to-back.
Would he have the power to say that yet, though? Like, that seems like something Carey Price might be able to pull off. Jack Campbell?
I don't know.
But also, you know, you look at it, and I know coaches will discuss this, and this is, I'm not being disrespectful to any team, but you're looking at it and going, San Jose isn't as strong as Pittsburgh, and they're in a back-to-back. Let's go with our best Friday night and then see how it unfolds on Saturday, and the backup goalie gets a tougher assignment, technically. I've been placed in that situation, too, where it's, you know, maybe
that's
the
what Babcock
team
used to do all the time, remember? We'd have that chat all the time. And he was like, I'm committed to the 2 points we think we can get, grab it, and then figure out what happens afterwards.
Agreed. I like that attitude, too. Bird in the hand, take it, and then see what happens the next night.
Then it's Campbell Friday night and it's Hutchinson Saturday by that logic.
Right.
And, you know, and see if Hutchinson could go into Pitt. It's not a guaranteed loss or anything like that. It's just more, it's a tougher schedule, border crossing, back-to-back, all of that travel. Like, it'll be a tougher start for the goaltender.
Yeah, I mean, I guess I would take in consideration if he's your number one, what does he want to do? But I would be inclined, can't believe I'm saying this, but go with the Babcock theory of, like, I'll go with the better guy in the easier game and try to get the 2 points and see what happens on the next night. And we don't want to go too far down the road, but, and it's a great problem to have, and the Leafs have had it many times, but I just, you know, he's a UFA after this year too, guys. Like, you know, as much as you like Mrazek and what he can do, you know, Cal Peterson, I don't know if that's a comparable to him, a good goalie with not a ton of experience. I don't know where he ends up. We'll get to that to do a different day, but it's always in the back of the Maple Leafs management team's mind. We love what he's doing on the ice. What's he going to cost us as soon as next year?
Yeah.
Johnny, what do you do with Nick Ritchie? I mean, not what do you do with him, but he hasn't been great. He hasn't been awful. But the bottom line is Mitch Marner hasn't really found any offense, and there was no offense last night. Is he a guy that's probably looking at himself? Because sometimes, regardless of what you're doing out there, when you play with the big boys, when you're the guy flanking them that's got to go in the corner and get all the pucks and do the dirty work, you're a casualty because nothing's happening.
Yeah, it's well said, though. Like, they're not going to split up Austin Matthews and Mitch Marner because they're not going well, but you're the one who's going to take the hit and get slid down the lineup. Now, I think they give them the week, you know, two or three more games with Austin in the lineup and see if they can't get some production going, because they haven't really had the chance to play with Austin Matthews in a game situation, develop that chemistry. And Mitch Marner has certainly missed having Austin Matthews around as well. So I think they give him a few more games, but you're right. You know, he's probably put a lot of pressure on himself. Like, what do I got to do to be kind of like Hyman and to help these guys? And what do they need from me? And I guess he's probably asking them, but it's tricky to do that when you're thinking about how do I take my game and not just apply it the best I can, but, you know, fit it into these guys, because he knows he has to fit. Because if he doesn't, doesn't matter how well he's playing, if the line's not going, he's not going to last there. So, I think I appreciate Sheldon Keefe talking about him a couple days ago, saying, you know, he's not a puck stopper, plays continue on him, good things are happening, he's trying to pump his guys' tires, but he just is not around it enough, or hasn't been around it enough to show the big body, the nice hands, the offensive touch that he might have. So I give him another week, and if that line's not going, then you're going to see Alex Kerfoot up there, I would imagine, or Bunting. Could play up there as well, and then they'll shuffle the other guys around further down the lineup. But he knows that, and that would be a stressful situation because he wants to make it work. It's a huge opportunity for Richie, and so far he's not made the most of it.
With Mike Johnson, well, it also just points to how big of a missed opportunity this is for Ilya Mikheyev, because he would have been given that opportunity, I believe. It sounded like he was going to be given the first crack at the Tavares-Nylander line, and I don't think Bunting's coming off out anytime soon. It's a moot point because Mikheyev's out for a couple of months, but Michael Bunting has come as advertised, right? He aggravates, he goes to the net.
I like him a lot.
I like what I've seen. Like, it's not
good player.
You know,
I would have personally, I don't know how you guys feel, but I would have challenged that goal last night. Like, I'd be so shocked that they didn't challenge that. Like, if you look at the overhead, Bunting slashes the goalie and then kicks the pad with his left skate.
Right.
Like, I mean, it's a goal, good for him, and that's exactly how he's going to score goals. But that was I'm going to challenge that. But the coach was like, he's Charlie Montoya back there playing the bongos.
Yeah, no, like, it's all good,
I was
man.
Like, Jerry, I was on. Shocked that they didn't look. At least take another minute and take a look at it. I was shocked.
Yeah. Well, they were kind of delayed waiting for it, right? During the TV, they were talking about that, I believe.
Well, the goalie was picking his nose, like spun around backwards. He didn't know what.
How did he spin around backwards?
It's nothing. Just happened
to do it. The defenseman shoved Bunting into the crease. That's why.
I'm sure he worked hard to get out of there, too.
He doesn't have to. I only have to work as hard as you're pushing me. Don't push me if you want me here.
Take a look at the overhead again. Left skate kicks the left pad.
Yeah, because I'm trying not to eat the crossbar because you're shoving me from behind. Leave me alone. I'm out of here. Let your goaltender make the save. That's what I say. Don't challenge
him. Big hug from the behind. That's what it was. Hey, good on Bunting. He's like you said, he's come as advertised.
Yeah,
sure.
This is
like
what they said. Remember, we had Rick Tocchet on a few weeks ago. He said he's a greasy little player that will piss you off and get in your face and hit you when he can and go to dirty areas and play dumb. You know, it's like that's kind of the definition of a greasy player, the guy who plays dumb afterwards.
Right.
You know, going right
look
the crease.
Like, what did I do? What are you talking about? Not even know. I'm just trying to play here. But he's a straight line guy, which is like he can shoot it really well. So like when a puck's on a stick, he can shoot in the net, which as evidenced by his goal scoring last year, even in the short sample. Straight line fast skater. He's not. His one limitation is that maybe he doesn't see the ice in the same way to make great passes, hit delays, and everything else. But it doesn't matter with the guys he's playing with. Like they love a straight line guy who pushes guys back, who can shoot the puck in the net, who can stir it up, get the puck back. And I love the fact that, I mean, I don't know if you guys read the article, I think it was in The Athletic, but about his, growing up and his mom and his brother. It's just, like, it seems, and oh, you could maybe relate to this as well, playing in Toronto kind of matters to him, maybe more so than playing in Arizona. Like, it's a special, unique thing for him. And it seems like he's enjoying it, but also kind of trying to make the most of it, knowing that it's pretty special to get to play in your hometown. I did it. I'm a Scarborough kid. I played in Toronto for the Leafs. Like it's amazing to be there with your family and friends and the team that you watch growing up and everything else. So it's a nice story for him. I'm glad to see him having some early success.
Well, let me ask you about that because you represent Scarborough. So on January 1st, 1998, the city of Toronto amalgamated. So Scarborough, East York, North York, York, Toronto proper. Yet Scarborough is like, oh, that's my hometown. Aren't they from Toronto? Like, why? How is Scarborough the hometown, Johnny? You explain that to me. Why didn't anyone say I'm from East York or I'm from North York?
Well, I say that because when I was born in Scarborough, it was still called Scarborough.
It was, yes.
So I've been grandfathered into my Scarbarianness.
Okay.
But I think Scarborough, because it is outside, like it means on the edge of the city, it's not surrounded by the rest of Toronto.
Right.
You can still kind of geographically carve it out and say this part up here in the northeast corner of the city is Scarborough. And there's nothing else around it. It's part of Toronto, as we call it now. And I also think, I don't know about East York and Toronto proper and everything else, but there is an element of, of grittiness, toughness, people that, not for me.
I can say it. I've visited there. Our studios are there.
There's some beautiful parts of Scarborough.
There's some tough parts of Scarborough.
Tam O'Shanter.
Dude, the first golf course I played, though, was Tam O'Shanter. I lived my townhouse where I grew up when I was born.
It's
was
Augusta.
Was 300 yards from there, Stephen Leacock Arena. So, and I think that's the identity, and that's why it gets siphoned off on its own, because there is an identity to the people and to the neighborhood that is unique to the rest of Toronto. And I think the people that do well coming out of Scarborough take pride that, we came out of maybe a bit of a tougher spot and we're doing well. And we want to recognize that maybe some of that toughness has helped us along the way, which didn't always seem like the case when you're going to be in high school and things might not look so good. So that's my rationale.
Okay.
And don't mess with it because you're messing with Scarborough. And that's not something that you want to do. Coming from Brooklyn or Whitby or wherever it is.
Yeah, I'm from Toronto proper, buds. I grew up in the city limits of Toronto.
I thought Toronto wanted to get rid of it. They were happy to be like, you guys head out on your own.
But you know what I'm saying, Johnny. Like, no one's like, I'm from York, my hometown of York.
Yeah.
It's like Scarborough is an outlier, and I understand why people love it and represent. And to your point, prior to 98, it was you know, a separate government and I guess
and it's
a separate
huge, right?
City. Like, it's a massive part of
like
town.
Like a million
sure.
people live in Scarborough.
Yeah.
Or what was Scarborough. So, you know, it is big enough to be its own city in Toronto.
Well, like Shanahan is from
Mimico.
But Mimico. And Mimico's another one. It's not Etobicoke, it's Mimico. Right? It's you got to get it right. Mimico, not Etobicoke.
Well, Hayes, listen, I hear people say that from Mississauga, which is essentially Toronto.
Yes. Well, don't tell them. Don't tell people in Mississauga.
Well, that's what I'm saying. It's as close. I mean, I know it's not on the same banner of Toronto, but it's as much part of Toronto as Scarborough is part of Toronto, geographically okay. and everything else.
Yeah. All right. All right, Johnny, I just wanted clarity on that. Your hometown of Scarborough, Ontario.
Listen, we'll go to Johnny's Burgers on the way home. Okay. We'll have a meeting, and we'll sort it out.
All right, bud. We'll do that. Lock it in. Thank you for this. We'll do it later in the week.
All right, guys. Have a good day.
There's Mike Johnson, our TSN hockey analyst, joining us here on the Maple Toyota Hotline. They take away the fears of buying a pre-owned vehicle by sharing service history, lean history, and accident history. Find out more at MapleToyota.com.